The session is it has two titles. One that Walt Bowman gave, which is non-biological differences between the sexes, and the one that I had put on the board, which is non-sexual differences between the sexes. Either one is satisfactory. The first thing that we will do, however, is to have a little test this morning on Monday. Since you've all been studying over the weekend, we'll need to have a test. I have some pencils for those of you who don't have pencils. And I'll circulate those, and I'll give the people up in the mezzanine their copies. All correct.
Does a male have to admit that?
But they don't all measure sexuality.
Huh? No. Indirectly, some of them might, because it's the way we view an individual and react to them.
Yeah, because of
behavior. Now, there's been more than a couple. There have been numerous reactions to this first sheet. Before I give you a second sheet, do you have any reactions that you want to share with the whole group here? Carol?
Our question six has been true. Tell me a little bit about that.
Okay. When I structured number six here, I did so before some very recent research findings, which would indicate there is a change in this particular items. More recent research would indicate that females there is disagreement at this point, that they do not see themselves as so significantly more accepted and intrinsically valued, more so than boys.
I guess I would see that as if you were talking about females in a school situation, very often, especially in an elementary school situation, girls or high school for that matter, girls see themselves as being valuable students, good girls.
Yes.
But I can't imagine that outside in the work world or in society as a whole that they would.
Yeah, you have to look at the age group upon which the study was in fact conducted. You get a different reading due to that factor, plus occupational factors entered into this also. Other reactions? Yes?
It has been my experience in teaching some adolescent stuff from the area of psychology that you can find research studies to verify almost anything you want. I think we could go through every one of these and say, like number two, there's been research shown that women will purposely score lower an analytical type test because it's considered masculine.
Mm-hmm. They will do so beginning in about the sophomore year in school. Mm-hmm. Well, they'll start to back away from mathematics and the sciences because this is viewed as basically not feminine to get too serious about this stuff. And so the males then assume more interest and more dominance in pursuing that subject matter area. But those are social, cultural factors. There, Chuck.
Who said so?
What?
I mean, where are you getting these statistics?
What statistics are you referring to?
The whole thing.
The whole thing. Well, some
survey of them. Or what is it? Is it something you put together out of a bunch of stuff, or did somebody compile this? No, I guess what I'm asking is, the source.
Okay, some of it are done through independent studies by psychologists in the area of human growth and development. Some of this comes from research conducted by Patricia K.O. Sexton, a sociologist currently at New York University. And most of her work was based upon or funded by the National Institute of Mental Health, in which she gathered statistical evidence readily available through the government, American Medical Association, et cetera.
And you, the resources you consider reliable, I mean, they're not like from the John Birch Society?
No. I consider them reliable.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, back here.
I was just going to say number 20 also could be a largely cultural thing rather than innate.
Oh, sure.
Because watching guys, when I was growing up and being very tall very early, and the dynamic of boys trying to relate with a girl taller than me, taller than themselves, that thing about conforming to the other boys, you know, everybody would deal with me and the whole locker room stuff. I would say that was flatly false, that whole statement, no matter what statistics you had, just by what I lived with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm sure there's lots of other
You're going to find exceptions to every bit of information. Even though it might be a case of an N of one, you're still going to have some exception. Okay, I don't think you can disregard that. Let me give you another sheet if you think you're disturbed by the first quiz. You might have to share these. I think we only ran off about 75, and we've got obviously more than that here. So.
You would share it. Will you share it?
What? If you can share them, I'd appreciate it. Maybe it might be good if spouses shared one copy. Balcony need more? Okay, we need some more up here. Got any extra copies in the back yet? This is hard data, Chuck. This is from her research available through medical records, etc. I'll give you a few minutes to look at that before we start with something else here. Yes?
I'm going to remember this. More males die in accidents. Is that because they're involved in more accidents or because they're less strong to recover?
That's related to what is believed to be, and pretty well substantiated, that males are more aggressive than females, and therefore they venture into things in which they can't really interpret very well the danger of the situation they find themselves in. And therefore, are viewed as being more accident prone. You could say they're more daring, they exhibit what we would classify more bravery.
Less coordinated.
Yes, oh, less coordinated, yes.
Well, also further to find yourself in occupations as an adult that are of a higher risk.
Yes.
Being a logger as opposed to being,
being an iron worker walking the beams on the 58th story of some building someplace as it's going up. Yes. They'll enter into occupations that are in fact of greater risk to them personally. Okay, right here.
Could that be more of a culture?
Exceptions. Well, those of you not able to see what transpired, could we have a verbal description of said. Okay, here we go.
Could you say then, and this is more of a cultural difference than a biological difference, if boys have more accidents, the girls are taught to be more aggressive. I'm saying, is it more cultural than more biological?
We could probably see a change, but it'll be quite a while. Once females begin to enter into occupations that, in fact, are classified as riskier, mm-hmm. you will probably see a cultural, social phenomena taking place. Like however, I must counter that by saying males are, in fact, stronger physically. Their muscle structure is such that they can, in fact, do work that is associated with requiring that, and secondly, the danger that's associated with it.
I have a question on that one, on endurance. It's been proven that women's endurance is much greater than men, and that's why I put golf helmets.
Okay, now, I'll qualify that a little bit. Endurance
in
what area?
Such as pain.
Okay.
A longer endurance.
Okay.
To cold and to heat as well.
Okay. Other areas, more recent research would indicate that the women as a group are probably going to be superior marathon runners than males. But it's a male-dominated area, it has been. But females are, in fact, doing very well marathon running. But it's a social, cultural phenomenon that has left this largely a male domain. The women can run with the same kind of endurance and stamina that males can. In fact, some support for them doing better.
Maybe strength and endurance then should not be linked as the same thing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. They're two completely different areas.
Too stupid to quit.
Somebody said too stupid to quit, but I won't identify.
Stubborn.
Excuse me. Yes.
I vaguely remember reading something about the several of these early childhood diseases and causes of death being a result of the socialization, the difference in the socialization process of boys and girls. And I can't really remember what I was saying. I'm wondering if anyone else has run into that.
Anyone want to comment on that? What is a normal expectation parents place on a male child or baby or infant as opposed to female?
Well, the nurturing is often different.
Nurturing is different. Back here, the window.
Since girl babies are handled more frequently, they may get the necessary germs sooner and build up their antibodies. That would be a medical related to the culture. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't think in the first year of life that the culturalization would be making boy infants tough them out. So, yeah. I mean, you might see that at age 3 or something where you might not treat a little boy with a cold where you coddle a little girl.
There is some support to the fact that we do, even as parents, very early begin to react differently to the two sexes. Yes?
Data-wise, I'm not sure what's going to happen in the future, but in my practice, I represent a lot of people in workers' compensation claims. And EEOC is making some lumber mills and sawmills hire a substantial number of females. And when they become injured, and they do seem to become injured with the same rapidity as men, and the wearing, sort of the grinding, hard, repetitive work of lifting, twisting, bending, and turning, of heavy items, seems to take a pretty fair toll on them. And I'm not sure that with lighter bodies and smaller upper body structure, that EEOC has really done them a lot of good by the time that they become 45 and 50 years old. Do well at younger ages, but everybody gets beat up in those industries, and I just think the women are going to end up getting arthritic and really disabled from 25 years of working in sawmills much more rapidly than that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
I can think of two possible reasons for that. One being that the work process and the situation has been developed for the male driver. And the second, that women in those occupations find themselves putting out 110% trying to keep up and prove themselves and cause this wood wear out faster.
Must do a double effort almost in order to prove the point that I can do the same work, same level of competence, same quality, etc. It may take its toll. I think some of the current research findings relative to stress on women indicates that they're just as vulnerable now in occupations that have high heart problems associated with them as men are. It takes its toll too.
And that will change our statistics.
Mm-hmm.
I always get a little nervous when interpreting statistics like this because it's always measuring what has happened. And by the time the statistics come in, you know, all this is old data. And something new is happening now, mm-hmm. even in the area of handling young children and some of the measurements on that first sheet.
Mm-hmm. I think with automation coming in, we'll see some differences too because people won't be required to do all that heavy work.
I'm wondering on many of these studies if they aren't influenced by something else, I don't know what. But I remember, for example, back in the early 30s, and I know it went back into the 20s, we used to have girls' basketball teams in high school. And studies were carried out, and the medical profession decided that it was too hard on girls, so they discontinued basketball. Now we're back into it. You can, as somebody said earlier, you can either find or develop any kind of statistics you want. What's the motivation behind this now? What was the motivation behind it then? Is this what really determines statistics, or is it really factual?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of reasons for doing studies. Some are based upon curiosity. Some are based upon the fact that people disagree with the results, and I pretty confident that bias enters all research. It may be the cause for research to be started, but it's hard to keep bias out of research. So you have to look at what motivated people to engage in the research to begin with. And you have to really look very carefully how the study was set up, how the results were interpreted, because it's well known that we can oftentimes look at the same data and read different things in that data. Okay?
Research is biased and very vulnerable to error. But without it, all that we have to go on is total bias and opinion mm-hmm. and our own experience. And that's mm-hmm. even less reliable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this is very true, but when we get data such as these that you've been reporting, we put our full confidence in them too. Mm-hmm. And I don't know the answer here. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can take the, if I can use an example that's loaded with bias, I suspect, is the Surgeon General's office work on cigarette smoking versus the American tobacco industry's research on smoking. And then you sit there with the big question, you know, who's telling the truth? Maybe this is one time you place greater faith in the government. I don't know. Now, one thing I think ought to be considered here is the fact that maybe we ought to, based on what we know now and what we will continue to learn, we ought to treat the sexes according to the abilities that are demonstrated. All right? Women or females have, in fact, very good fine motor skills. But how many women end up being neurosurgeons? Not very many. Why? I think we know why. But that's fine motor coordination. Now, why couldn't women enter that work? See? We ought to take advantage, I think, and allow people to pursue an area in which they have competence, either as a result of the fact that they are of one sex or another. But we're fighting social, cultural phenomena, and that's hard to overcome. It's hard to get people to rethink something. Now, another thing, two individuals have done some research on all the studies that have been done about sex differences. And Eleanor McCobe and Carol Jacklin, in 1974, published the results of their efforts. And they looked at all the previous research. And they found that certain things were well established and documented in a number of studies. One is that girls have greater verbal ability. That seems to be pretty well substantiated. Now, what does that mean in terms of education? If you look at it from the standpoint of schooling, formal education, girls have an advantage over boys. We structure schools based on language and symbolism, and we allow girls to maintain that in the school, and I think it may take its toll on the male student in the fact that males will present more problems in language usage, reading, and things of that nature than will females. We structure the school on that basis. We ought to rethink that matter. Secondly, boys excel in visual, spatial, and mathematical skills. And third thing available is that boys are more aggressive than girls. That can be pretty well substantiated. Now that's based upon their summation of going through all the research that's available.
Are those things, again, innate, biological, like mathematical skills, is innately male?
Mm-hmm. But
by brain chemistry or
yeah,
what?
Yeah, it appears to be an innate feature of us.
But
I don't want to give you the impression here that females lack spatial reasoning ability or mathematical skill. They have those, but males are slightly ahead of them. I'd say slightly. I mean, not 75%, 20%.
I think if you look at the role models that people have, you know, as they're growing up, they learn how to read from a female teacher in the elementary school. When we get into junior high, and they have a male science teacher and a male math teacher, and that's, you know, so if the girls are going to follow their, the female role models and the men follow the male role models, that's naturally what you become. I think a lot of it is not innate that way.
And part of that, I think, is a fault of our schools. We do these strange little things, and I'm not sure where I got started. We have grade one, grade two, grade three. And over all the years that I've taught and worked with children with learning difficulties, it becomes really clear to me that if you wipe that out and let these children learn, girls may, with their verbal ability, pick up quickly to the symbolism and the semantics and the meaning of language, even the printed, the graph part of it. And boys will, very often, given just a little more time. And then you find that the girls begin to do some of those boy features a little later. Their developmental lines just keep moving. You know, they don't have these markers at grade one, grade two, grade three, like we do for some strange reason. And so we get these kids into learning difficulty programs before they've had a chance to really develop and finish their initial learning. So I think the school does part of that statistical jump to us.
If I may add something here, then we'll go back here. It's very hard for us to counter tradition. We maintain the 9-month school year. Why? Because all those kids in Philadelphia have to get back to the farms. There's no reason why we can't have school year round. But that's tradition we have set up, and why should education formally occur 9 months, and it happens to coincide with the harvesting and planting of crops. Okay.
I was going to say, you were talking about a lot of these things are, well, we need to allow people to do things based on their demonstrated skills. And I think, again, there's a tension there between what has been allowed to be demonstrated by who, you know, according to cultural and schooling sorts of things. Some girls begin demonstrating certain skills in terms of athletics and group sports, and they're sort of discouraged from doing that because those are the boys' things. You know, some girls demonstrate gifts in math or in science, and if they're allowed to pursue those, they are really cut off from the female social socializing, and the men don't quite know what to do with them either, so they're kind of cut off there. So I think demonstrated skills, there's a difference there between demonstrated and potential skills. So I wouldn't want to lump everything on, well, what have we seen you able to do, you know, according to whose standards and whose permission, as opposed to the potential skills that I think we share a lot more cross-sexually than we have acknowledged.
I think we have to be really careful about talking about anything innately, because we would have to be able to provide a test that could measure it, and there just is none. As a matter of fact, there isn't even a good test to measure verbal ability or spatial ability. And if it were innately true, it would be cross-culturally true. And I don't know how you design a test to test that. So, and you said yourself that even very early we as parents do some modeling with children. Perhaps males, we tend to give them instruments in which to be more spatially and abstractly or whatever involved. So I would be hesitant to use the word innate.
Okay. Mary, way in the back.
And yet, in the ancient Chinese culture, with their yin-yang circle, one was male and one was female, the male being analytical, the female being more intuitive. Mm-hmm. So have we just inherited this thing from way, way back, or was that, you know, maybe it isn't so much cultural, maybe it really is innate.
That's the interesting point, when you look at it from another culture standpoint.
Margaret Mead was asked a question between the difference between males and females, and this was sometime after 1970 in Seattle. And what I remember that she said was that males are more aware of shape and females are more aware of color. And in all her studies around the world, that's what she came up with. So that spatial reasoning would fit into that. But that did, you know, that did not say that women weren't able to think analytically. And I'm really attracted to this thing here where it said that males were more able to transfer learning. Males are somewhat superior in the ability to transfer learning. I say again, that's very cultural. Women are discouraged from showing their intelligence and their reasoning abilities and their problem-solving abilities. And it's just very true. In high school, women start backing off. I can remember very clearly having a pretty dynamic president of our, it was an international relations league club. About mid-year, she started backing down and trying to come down.
How does transfer of learning get measured by how you put your school into a job?
That way, and how you take specific, as well as general transfer from a formal educational setting and relate it to something outside of that context. Okay.
How can a housewife be a staff user? It seems to be a very, very tied in with the whole concept of the woman staying home and the men going out to work, because our schooling is perceived as job preparation, which I don't agree with. But
somebody over here, yes.
I don't know how much you wanted to keep this out of the biological realm, but I just wonder if you could maybe shed some light on this, because I understand that there's, it's really not fair to say that someone is male and female. It's not a total biological thing. You're basically male or you're basically female, but share a good number of inherited genetic material that shows up in physical ways and other ways and whatnot. It's not a straight, the curve is on a slant kind of thing. It varies. People are more basically male or less basically male, but still basically male, whatever. Mm-hmm. Is that fair on what we're discussing about here?
Yes, it is. John Money, some of you may know John Money, John Carroll. His research has pretty much covered his lifetime thus far, and he and Anki Earhart have looked at factors that contribute to what we would call being male as opposed to being female. And their belief, based on their work, is that sexual identity is as much a social decision as a biological one. Now you think about that for a while, which means, and they have worked with some unusual kinds of cases, I must admit, but that how adults relate to us has a lot to do with how, you could say, masculine we become or how feminine. And that, I think, is kind of a very heavy, weighty matter at this point. And their research is continuing.
I think this can be very, very subtle. And oftentimes we don't even realize when we're, that's the problem, we don't realize that we're being reinforced negatively or positively. For my love of academics, for example, I've been told that I've developed my masculine self much more than my feminine. I've also received negative reinforcement of my femininity, as in if there's a girl in a conversation and guys, and the girl who is quiet and more passive and is listening, and I am involved in the conversation, comments like, you're so sweet, you're so nice, go to this other girl who's sitting there. Oh, you have an open mind. I mean, it's odd, and I'm not saying that that's overt on their part either, but it can just be so.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can respond back here, getting to what we know, or what we strongly believe to be innate. And let's take a motor skill development as an area. Females are, in fact, ahead of males in motor skill development, both large muscle and fine muscle, up until around the sophomore or junior year in school, high school. Well, what happens all the way along? What do we do in raising boys and girls relative to large motor and fine motor activities? We put them together, don't we? Law doesn't permit us to discriminate in school. You must have co-ed classes in gym. Can't escape that. And yet, the two are not comparable in terms of ability to do the same kind of tasks until around the sophomore or junior year. And all the way along, females have a decided advantage in motor skill development, both fine and large muscle. So why couldn't we, in fact, have different kinds of activities for both male and female students? Can't make the same expectations out of both. They're not capable.
I've been reading a book lately called All We're Meant to Be, which I recommended to a number of people, and I recommend it again. It's a biblical approach to women's liberation, but there's some good biblical scholarship and some good scientific scholarship, and also in to address Brad's point about some of the biological maleness and femaleness, they make the point that of the 46 chromosomes in every fertilized egg, 44 have nothing to do with sexuality of the child. They're basic human being activities. The final two are the ones that determine the sex of the child. And yet, culturally, so we share 44 things more in common than the two things that distinguish us, male and female. And yet, culturally, they also make the point here, we are raised more in terms of our womanhood or manhood as opposed to personhood, humanhood, sort of. Mm-hmm. And that's where they're saying that the gospel and our Judeo-Christian faith can really address all of us in terms of nurturing all of our humanness, which involves being male and being female, but that great underlying factor, you know, which makes us all human, which makes us all created by God, which makes us complete persons, with the added sort of gifts of male and female, rather than as chopping off points, there's sort of gifts we have which distinguish us and identify us a little bit further than just being sort of a universal human blob. Mm-hmm. But I think culturally, and that's where most of our discussion has been also oriented, around maleness and femaleness. And it takes us a long time to get to that point of saying, okay, with those distinctions aside, what are the real treasures that we have as being human beings that we can trade off and nurture? Mm-hmm.
Very good. Other comments? Okay.
In the discussion, a lot of comments have come up about, you know, that a lot of these things on the quiz, et cetera, are socially programmed. Is it something we are to deplore or applaud? I recognize that a lot of the things that we put on people because of their one sex or another are unfortunate. Is it all unfortunate? How are we to think about this? Is it something we should try to get away from totally? Is it something we should continue to nourish in some ways? The socialization of the different sex.
Okay, anyone want to respond to that? Okay, back here.
Well, I think perhaps my answer would harken back to what was said just a bit ago, that within each of us there are elements of being male and female. And I think we need to be able to flow back and forth with that to whatever potentials we each have. There are some things that are laid upon us as females, which are their gifts. I mean, to say that it's all right for a female child's emotions to flow over into tears, for the tears of joy or tears of sadness or tears of anger, that's a wonderful thing. And that ought to be given, that kind of freedom ought to be given to male children too. So I don't think all sexual expectations or allowances or freedoms or whatever are necessarily bad. I just think that we ought to really free up that whole thing of what it means to be male, what it means to be female, allow some fluidity there, and some value judgment as to what's a freeing thing and what's a restrictive thing.
Okay. Let's hear first.
I think it will be interesting in just this room to know what we think of when we think of feminine and what we think of when we think of masculine. And a professor I had in college did some research on the Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory, which has an MF scale. And the research was really interesting because the most masculine male was a very macho policeman, cop type. And not to put down policeman, but it was the machoism. And the most feminine female, and not to put down maid, but was a maid, and with no education. And the point was, the higher the educational and academic skills of the individual, the less feminine or less masculine. I think that's the kind of cultural thing we have to examine. And not to raise males as machoism and put down culture and music. And not to raise women as being getting into only verbal things, but analytical and scientific and things as well.
The oppression works both ways. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just a matter of where have women, you know, yeah. I can't say where have women been confined and stuff. It's also where have the men been confined by all of these cultural expectations. And two, the man who is a more sensitive person who cries, who is not afraid to cry, who loves English, who is a poet, or who fixes hair, you know, goes through a lot of the same crap that women do who are trying to be engineers because of those kinds of expectations too. So, you know, whether we applaud or nourish maleness and femaleness, again, is so relative because every person suffers when one aspect of sexuality is upheld and lauded over against another. So it's not just a matter of women being oppressed or women needing to be freed from, you know, the horrible male. There are a lot of men who need to be released from having to feel they have to be the macho cop, you know, tough talking dude, so that they can be fully human as well.
Right. Yep.
Plug for the bookstore. There are three or four books in the bookstore that we have for children that are non-sexist kinds of literature. One that Marlo Thomas edits called Free to Be, You and Me. One called William Doll. One just called Free to Be. If anybody's interested in that for their children.
Something I just thought of was in terms of people that are homosexual, and there many times that I've encountered men that are, I found them to be much freer with their love and their sensitivity, their ability to do fine handwork, things like that. And yet at the same time, they can be that, but they can also be really good mechanics. They can be many different things. And with women, it's been the same thing, that they flow. The flow back and forth is a very easy, natural progression for them. And I've never thought of it in terms of this until this discussion. But it'd be interesting to check in.
If I can also respond to your question, I think one thing that ought to be done is to destroy as many myths as possible and get those things out of the way. So we aren't left with those things hanging around. We ought to be more tolerant of the individuals. And I would agree that the males get put in terrible predicaments too and placed under expectations that they can't handle very well. And, that's why I think we ought to be a little more concerned about what we know about individuals and what we know generally about characteristics that we can document rather well through research about the individual sexes. Are we putting people in unrealistic kinds of predicaments? That's really totally unfair to them. We put them into situations and we expect them to perform and do things when they're not capable of doing that kind of thing. And I look at it from my experience in education. I think we make a lot of mistakes in school that we can correct. And I think everybody would be happier, teachers, students, and parents, if we did things and reacted to children much differently than we do.
As I said, I really like what this woman is saying over here, except that the measure of humanness becomes maleness oftentimes. And we can see that most poignantly when we talk in God language. When we try to do some things in changing language to reflect, quote, humanness, it comes out that the measure of humanness is maleness. The high end of the scale is rational. The other end is the dumb maid kind of thing, And so the measure of humanness is maleness. And I don't know how to get over that, because we become threatened at a very deep level when we discuss what does it mean to be a human being.
Yes?
Have there been any schools at all that have attempted to equalize things a little bit right at the beginning, that is, start male children, say 2 years older than female children? It seems to me that would present some very interesting statistics. I know there have been open schools, but...
No. I can't say that I can recall any offhand. But there are suggestions for doing things like that. Starting males at a different time in school so they're slightly more comparable to the female student. Since most teachers don't individualize for 25 people, and they tend to treat everybody alike, we ought to rethink that.
I just think that would take care of some of the cultural things, too. The little girl's ability to perform very well and therefore feel superior, and the boy's not reading as soon or not being as coordinated, that there might be a different, a whole new psychological way of perceiving themselves, really more equal to begin with.
Well, I think what Carol says, I teach first graders, and that's very true. I think we find the majority of the people that are ending up having Title I help or having SOBP help are boys. And it's simply because, not because they're less able to do it, but they're just not ready for it yet. They're not mature enough.
Yeah.
And then what happens and what kind of goes hand in hand with that is that they become kind of defeated right away.
And behavior problems.
And their behavior problem along with it, and then they start relying on this help, and their own abilities don't come through until that real need to show that they can do it does, which comes much later than maybe it would if they started when they were ready.
You might be interested in checking your own state laws about when must children start school.
Yeah.
You may find that you're living with a tradition as opposed to what the law requires. For example, when we lived in Arizona, starting age for school was age 8, first grade. But everybody had them there about 2 years ahead of that. And what part of my work there was to convince some parents, particularly with boys, that let's back off, let's wait another year at least, or maybe longer, before we start school. And in the meantime, here are some things that can be done. But that's unusual for states to allow that much liberty.
The English have some interesting ways, and maybe our friend from England knows more about it, that they begin at 4 years old in the infant school in many districts. And they visit school and visit with the teacher. And then she may say, all right, let's have your child come 3 days a week in the morning for 5 months. Or she may say, why don't you come and visit me again in half a year? And they take the child when he's ready to do their most beginning things, and then he moves at his own rate, but is not cut off at grades.
measured by, not measured by such, it moves, progresses.
Let me add one thing about relative to reading here. One country that has very few problems in reading, based upon my own kind of rough research, is Germany. What's unique about Germany relative to reading? Anyone know?
They read in German.
Well, at least one person has had a Gestalt experience. No, the reason is, it seems to be that the teaching of reading in Germany is associated with a male activity. Interesting. Male teachers are teaching the reading, and therefore, apparently, there are far less problems associated with this. In our own country, students who end up being good readers, one interesting thing about them is you will find very often that their fathers spend a lot of time reading with them or reading to them. Interesting. And that is not viewed then by that individual child as, oh, reading is more feminine than it is masculine. It's both, really.
The compulsory age for starting school in England is the beginning of the term after the child is five. But in the past few years, 5 years or more, there's been a great demand for nursery education. And there is a big nursery program on now where children can be admitted after their third birthday for part-time education. And then, of course, there are the nurseries for working mothers where children are admitted at the age of three full-time.
Okay, balcony.
I get bothered when I hear people say, gee, we ought to keep boys back a couple of years. Not because it's boys, but I think we're working the problem the same way it's always been worked. Boys should do athletics and girls should study or sit aside. Instead of, say, promoting the idea that it is good for everybody to know how to hammer a nail and know how to kick a ball and for everybody to read. And the way I look at it is, maybe the concentration ought to be on the individual. I know a lawyer who goes home every summer and throws hay bales, and she's in a lot better shape than I am. Now, me, that's geared to the individual. I can't throw hay bales around. There's no way I can. And maybe that ought to be the thrust in our education, is to look at the individual. There's no reason why everybody should play basketball. I guess what I'm saying is maybe we ought to forget about the masculine and feminine thing altogether and say these things are good for society in general, that we all read, that we all have some sense of creativity, of working with our hands, of being able to go out and do athletic things, whether it's kicking a ball or throwing a ball or hitting a ball with a stick or something like that, rather than boys should play football and rugby and girls should play basketball. That's what I'm trying to say.
Anyone else? Yes.
I don't know when the studies were done in Germany, but when I went to school all the way through high school, you'd have to separate from day one boys and girls in different classes, so they didn't make a difference.
Yeah. Yeah, we can't do that in our society. We cannot have sex segregated classes. It's verboten.
On your studies here in statistics, I assume that these are all in the United States?
Yes.
Are there any studies that would indicate that the sexual biases are either greater or less in the United States as compared to other countries in the world? Or is this something unique to North America, or is it worldwide?
I don't. Here, maybe somebody can help us here.
We've been working with a lot of the Vietnamese refugees, and if you think we aren't liberated, those women really aren't liberated. When they came over in 75, the women broke out. I mean, it was the first time that they had a lot of the advantages, and their opinion counted for something, and they could go shopping, and they could do this and that. The male children, much more esteemed. I mean, they really get excited over a baby boy's birth, but not over a girl. And the boys at age six immediately turn into follow daddy around and
and now you do much more male things. I would say, from what I have learned just about the Oriental culture and the Vietnamese culture, that they're more, they're behind us, if you want to call that behind, you know, and they still keep things very separated, and female is very much this and male very much that.
Okay.
Perhaps the only androgynous culture I've ever heard about are the Cassidades, which is an N of 22 people.
Yes. So, you know what she's talking about?
Yeah.
Okay, explain a little more.
The Cassidades were a very small culture. Was it New Guinea?
No,
the
Philippines.
It was in the National Geographic. And there were no set roles for males or females. But there were only 22 people, and they were dying out. So I don't know if we have an androgynous.
I've heard some criticism of people who had been in the Philippines when the scientists, the anthropologists came. And they were there for a very short time. And it reminds me a little bit of when I was in New Guinea, I had my students like to read Margaret Mead's Growing Up in New Guinea. When they brought the book back to the library, I would ask them how they liked that book. And they would say, oh, they liked it very much. And then I'd say, you know, well, is this like your village? Oh, no. No. Not a one. And I think some vast generalizations are made by anthropologists who go in and think they've got the whole thing in a nutshell in a two-week study or something. So I guess I'd be really skeptical of a completely androgynous culture.
In the back. Yes.
I'm glad to hear about your generalization. I was thinking about this during the discussion. I think I came in here sort of wishing I'd get some cold hard facts while I learned something new. But I'm realizing these discussions are most helpful to me, and I hope for all of us, as we start thinking about ourselves and the roles that we play, the roles that we expect one another to play. And I don't think sexism any more than anything else can ever be legislated. I have come to realize that when I expect someone else to change their attitude so that I'm more liberated, I'm working up the wrong principle. But these kind of discussions help me take a look at who I am, what kind of expectations I have. I don't like what I see all the time because I realize all certain things that I have grown up with and hold strong fit new in me. Those are my things that I have changed. So each of us have a path to follow for ourselves to examine and to maybe seek to understand better. But I just wanted to reiterate that sexism as well as racism, none of those things should be legislated or taught to change in some way that we'll take our own. And I just
want to. Well, I would be sort of interested to look at how these studies are sort of influencing our thinking, you know, all these current studies and statistics, because if you look at, you know, when you're talking about tradition, I don't really believe that we follow tradition that much, because, say, prior to the First or the Second World War, most women stayed in the home. And then with the coming of Second World War, it was very popular, it was the right thing to do for older people and women to go and help in the workforce. Well, then after the Second World War, there wasn't as many jobs available, so those older women or older people and women were out of the workforce again. So I think there's a lot of economic and social implications to these studies as well, and I think that maybe that would be an area that we should talk about too. Just what's happening in the country that we have to have men and women very capable of doing the same thing.
Good point. Yes.
I'm going through the change right now where my mother, when she was 19, was married and had a baby on the way, and that was okay for her, but for me it's not. And so me living alone, me being involved in my church, on the council, doing things, it's really hard for me to relate to her because she can't see my side. She's saying, why aren't you married? Why don't you have a baby? And I'm just going, mother, let me out. That's not me. And so, consequently, we just don't fit into each other's world. We accept and love each other dearly, but we're just kind of saying, you're happy where you are, and I'm happy where I am, and let's just deal with that. Mm-hmm.
Teach your parents well.
Yes.
I've been thinking this morning, maybe because I woke up this morning and was running and saw a couple of deer, of the movie Deer Country, which to me dealt more with male roles in America than it did with Vietnam. Which is to say, I think it dealt more with the Vietnamization of our country than it did about the war itself. And in reflecting upon that movie, and upon, I don't know, have a lot of people here seen that movie? Just to capsulize, it deals with a small town in Pennsylvania, a mountainous region, similar to this area, populated by people who are working class persons. It's about the Vietnam War period when there were some, it's about the lives of three or four, five men in a small community, two of which were drafted and sent over to Vietnam and then had to return after having experienced Vietnam. And key to the film is a scene where this group of men, after a wedding party, one of the men has been married, go off into the mountains and they're hunting deer. And it's a very bloody and powerful and macho kind of relationship that they have to their world. And to go out and to kill the beast and bring home the beast, a sort of warrior, brings about a sort of warrior satisfaction and a very thrilling, bloody kind of thing. And to see these men go to Vietnam and have to deal with killing in the same, in a different sort of way, and yet the same kind of machismo behind it, and to have to come back and deal with the gruesomeness of that violence with their buddies, buddies with whom they had committed a similar sort of violence to animals. It's an interesting thing. And I've asked myself, in the splendor of that warrior, of those men who have this community, they go to the bars after they've worked and gotten hot and sweaty, and it's a kind of locker room kind of community. They have a shared kind of freedom that together that say a woman couldn't feel with that group of men. And the women on the other hand have a womanhood that they in the film, that they were behind their boys that were going off to war. And I think a lot about those two roles, you know, the warrior and the woman who supports and who is wedded and who's behind that man who must go out. And I wonder, you hear about the draft coming up again. Mm-hmm. You wonder about how easily we can shed those roles when it is that men do have a certain camaraderie together. There is a maleness that I think transcends the individual. And there is a femaleness. Our women get together, and that gathering of women and that gathering of men, they're two very different things. And I think they will always exist. I know the women here are my sisters, and men have a sort of brotherhood too. And so when we talk about having a country that is filled with individuals, I rejoice in that, and yet I think that women, as this womanhood and men, as a part of this manhood, there have got to be changes made in those two areas. You know what I'm saying? Because macho-ness is propagated or nourished and supported by men together, gathered together, without women, and there are those kind of gatherings.
But what would happen if women were also drafted? A lot of the opponents to ERA are against it because they said, then women can be drafted and go to war. How awful. To me, the sin is that anybody has to be drafted and go to war. Now, what would happen if the women were drafted also, were put through the kind of intensive killing training to kill that the men now go through in basic training, go over to Vietnam, I wonder if the experience, if the women would come back significantly different than the men because they were women. I don't know. Maybe, I suspect there will be, there would be some differences, but still overall, it strikes me that, that basic training and that kind of killing so that you don't be killed yourself just strips any maleness, femaleness in the end. If we were all experiencing that the same, and we would all become far more savage and stuff than any of us are now. I agree there would still be differences.
Okay. Let me just make a comment here. We're approaching the first setting for lunch. Some of you may want to go to that. I was going to hopefully get into some current research findings on differences related to the brain, male, female. But obviously we're not going to get into that. So those who want to leave, I suggest you go because first setting is pretty soon. The rest who want to still stay and talk, we'll just let these individuals go and then it'll be fun.